Tess Gallagher is an award-winning poet, short story writer, and essayist. She was born in Port Angeles in 1943, and even though she's lived other places, she always returns, sometimes bringing other artists into the community. This week on KNKX, we're telling stories from Port Angeles and the Northern Olympic Peninsula. Now, Tess is the reason Raymond Carver ended up there. He and Tess were together for a decade. After he died in 1988, she became the literary executor of his estate, restoring heavily edited pieces and publishing lost manuscripts. But enough about him. Let's hear from Tess Gallagher. She spoke with 88.5's Jeffrey Reddick.
Tess Gallagher invited me to her family home on Bay Street in Port Angeles. It sits on a bluff high above the Strait of Juan de Fuca. The property is teeming with life. Gigantic rhododendrons erupt with blooms. Maple trees make a little forest. A vegetable garden sprouts from the lawn. The house itself is modest and welcoming. By the time her father built it, Tess was 1 foot out the door, eyes on the wider world.
You know, because I really did have quite a lot of wanderlust. And I remember the first time I went to Europe, my father said, "Are you sure that you have to go over there?" And I said, "Yes, I'm sure I've got to go over there." They wanted me close.
When she was young, her parents worked all the time, and she helped out. They cut down trees for the mills and peddled their garden's bounty. She cooked and cleaned. Her childhood was full of responsibilities.
When did you realize that you observed things differently?
I think that I did learn how to observe, how to see people, how to be curious, how to imagine. And I learned it in a very funny way, that my father spent a lot of time in the taverns in this town, and there were as many taverns as there were churches in this town, Port Angeles. And my mother and I often used to be with my brothers in the car waiting for him. And we would watch people, and we would say what we thought was going on with them, who they were, what they were doing. I think that observation from when I was very young, just about human nature, was very valuable. Also, I read, because I had so much work to do, I began to be a kind of thief of time, and my stolen pleasure was reading. I can remember my mother saying, "What are you doing? Are you humped up in there again with a book?" And of course I would be.
In an essay she wrote recently, Tess calls herself a poet of two Northwests, Port Angeles, where she was born, and the Northwest of Ireland, where her wandering took her after the death of Raymond Carver. She met Josie Gray there in the early 1990s, and he became her companion. They were together for 25 years. He died last December, but his presence in the Bay Street house remained strong. He was a painter, and his work hangs on every wall.
We used to name his paintings together, and so a lot of the titles that are on there are titles that I might have come up with that he agreed to. And the paintings were kind of our children, you know. His painting started when he met me. He was 69 years old when we met, 18 years older than I was at the time. And one of the things I said to him was, "You know, you can't just sit around in a rocking chair and be a kind of man cat and watch me zing past you. You really have to get your own passion. I will feel sad if everything belongs to me and you don't have something that you adore. I will feel as if I stole your life." And he had never been to an art exhibit. He had never been to a museum. But he had my friends around us by then who were painters, and he started to paint. And so for the next 25 years, that's what he did. From living with him that long, I have him inside me. I have his way of speaking. I have his silences. I have his humor, his wit. That's one of the biggest things I really miss, is wit. We just don't have it here. It's like having a certain kind of poetry in your life, you know, and you don't have to make it. It's already coming to you. This farmer that lives right near me, Michael Henry, I met him in the roadway, and I said, Michael, I wrote about the going down to the boats there where the fishermen are leaving there. I wrote a poem about that. Oh, you did, Tess? I did. I said, and it got published. It did. In the New Yorker. The New Yorker. Well, I must go and look that up. And he saw me again in the roadway, and he said, Tess, I have your poem, and it's up in my kitchen. And I gave a copy of it to my son. And then he quotes me the end of the poem. And I thought, now I'm a poet. Success at last.
You'll have to read the whole thing for us.
Oh, Cloud Path. With steps freshened by wearing a man's cast-off shoes, I follow the rain-rutted road as far as the fishing boats turned upside down on the soggy bank, their oars secured elsewhere to provide against thieves. Mottled light through waterside trees over the bows and sterns means trading fish for birds. I take up the invisible oars put by for just this occasion, a banishing scald of sun blotted inexactly by a succession of wind-blown clouds, able to lift the entire flotilla. A bird flies through me, then a fish. You should be able to feel that delight of things passing through you. It's a poem which just wipes away fear by taking away all those boundaries, I think.
With so much of your writing, people are front and center. And to me, I think to a lot of people, that sort of life that is so full of interaction with neighbors and friends and family and would feel so exhausting that there wouldn't be any creative impulse left to make anything of it. But in reading your work, it's clear that energizes you.
Yeah, I want to feel connected. You know, I have to have solitude, obviously, in order to find the language I need to write anything. Your biggest element has to be solitude. I am a rather quiet person in that part of me that gets the work done. But the rest of me is very gregarious, you know. I also love to garden, and my mother did all the gardening here. And I find that I find my mother when I'm out there digging in the same places that she was digging.
Tess led me outside to see some of the places where she digs around.
This is what I call the point. And this is a garden that my mother used to make every year. And she had a garden out of iris, beautiful iris, and that's a very old-fashioned purple iris there. That garden didn't survive. Some water came onto it to ruin the bulbs, but I saved just a few. And then I replant every year and bring in things that are very colorful. We call this grouping in here, we call the family. And there's about five big, huge rhododendrons there. And because there were five children, so mother planted five of these, and now they're just enormous. They're as big as a house.
Her father also did some planting, a small orchard in a sunny patch on the lawn.
My friend Alice, who's a poet and who lives about a mile up the road on Deer Park from me, she and I pick these apples and we make applesauce and we give it to all the children in the family. And then there's also this plum tree. This is, if you have eaten a plum off this tree, you have been to heaven and then been made to come back to earth so that you could get another one. Well, so that's what I do when I'm not writing. I enjoy my garden. I walk around this garden every day.
Another place Tess visits every day is Sky House. That's her house, the one she designed and paid for with income from poetry readings. She and her mother shared general contractor duty during the building. Sky House is a couple miles east of Bay Street, and to get there, we hopped in Raymond Carver's old Mercedes sedan and coasted down Highway 101. Carver came along after Tess had already dreamed up Sky House, but she managed to find space for him there. The walls are covered with photographs of the two of them. The house is full of art, wall hangings her mother made, paintings done by friends and by Josie Gray. Sky House is also full of windows of all shapes. Triangles, octagons, and rectangles show odd glimpses of trees, mountains, and the water outside.
You can see the waves hit the shore here. That's just a separate pleasure all of its own. And you can see the different, there's brown, it goes from brown to light green to this kind of ultramarine kind of greeny blue. And this right here is the center of the universe here. And I sit here, and this is where most of my poems are written, right here at the center of the universe. Why it's the center of the universe, I don't know.
Hearing that reminded me of something she'd said at the Bay Street house when I asked how her life's trajectory might change now after the death of Josie Gray, her companion of a quarter century.
It's all open. That's the beauty of it and the dilemma all in one. How to be that open? I mean, that's the big lesson, you know. How to have everything and really no defined direction right now. That's the way it is every time you sit down to write your poem, too, though. So I think it's the thing of having faith that something really tasty and interesting is going to come forward. And it's all right that I don't know what it is.